Hey, business building warrior, welcome to the Silent Sales Machine Radio podcast, where we discuss creative ways to use the internet to launch and grow multiple income streams. We love the internet lifestyle around here, seeing the streams of income flowing in from the efforts that you've put into your business, allowing you to live life on your own terms, put your business in your pocket, and go where you want to, when you want to go there. It's a beautiful lifestyle that thousands of listeners to this show have developed for themselves and for their families. And we love to help others achieve the same thing. That's what we do here. And if you're brand new to e-commerce, specifically if you're brand new to Amazon, today's show is going to be a good one for you because we're going to spend some time with two of the great coaching directors on our team, Brian and Robin Joy Olson, who are going to give you some really good advice about diving into Amazon as a new seller. The basic lessons that we teach to all of our new students, they have a lot of the same questions, and they're going to dive into a couple of good ones today. One of those questions is, it doesn't feel like I'm approved to sell many products on Amazon. What's going on? There's only a few categories that I can sell in as a new seller. I feel very, very restricted by that. We hear that a lot. We answer that question a lot. We've got some great answers for you on that. We've actually got a link in the show notes today as well. Brian and Robin Joy didn't mention it in the episode, but I'm going to stick it in there as a little bonus link for you. Well, we've got a conversation in our Facebook group on that exact topic. So look for that ungating link in the show notes for today's episode and join that conversation. Some really good tips in there, along with everything that Brian and Robin Joy share with you as well. They're also going to share how to find more products that you can sell against as you're just getting started. Because if you're new around here, you need to realize that we have several different business models that we teach on and off of Amazon. But if you come to us and say, hey, I'm a clean slate, I just want something that works, I want the lowest risk, highest odds of success, lowest learning curve business model that you guys have, I'm ready to do the work, I'm ready to learn, apply what I'm learning, but which model should I look at? There's so much out there. Well, with over 20 years of e-commerce coaching experience on our team, and by the way, we'd love to talk to you about your e-commerce plans. Book a call on our calendar to have a free conversation with us at silentgym.com/book-a-call. We'd love to just have a conversation and talk and see what we have that's a good fit. But with everything that's out there on the landscape of opportunities, it's important for us to point out that we see Amazon and one specific model of Amazon selling, because there's dozens of models, one specific model that's the best on-ramp into building a very real business. Some people stay right there in that model, build a beautiful business. Others tack other income streams onto it. And we highly recommend that you diversify your risk by spreading out as soon as possible the different income streams that you have flowing into your business. But that starting point model is what Brian and Robin Joy Olson are going to talk about today. We've got 60 great coaches on our team. They manage several people who are on our coaching team. So they hear these questions regularly. They coach themselves for our team as well. These are the kind of questions that we get from new students, and we love diving into them on Coach's Corner, typically our Wednesday episodes. So all that's coming in just a moment. Let me just give you a couple brief announcements. It's almost time for us to start talking about this event because it's almost here. We've been talking about it for months, but the Proven Conference is happening. As of a couple of days ago, over 700 people from our community are now registered to attend that event. It's nearly sold out. We could actually sell out this very large room that we booked for this event this year. So plan on being there. Get your tickets if they're still available. Go to this website, The Proven Conference. It's three words, theprovenconference.com, and join us. 40 breakout sessions on all manner of income stream opportunities. We can't wait to have you there, to meet the community. Hey, if money is an issue, if you're maybe skeptical, you want to check it out, it's your first time, we still have some scholarship slots available. Inquire about that on the website as well, The Proven Conference. Last thing, I got a freebie for you that I'm going to turn it over to Brian and Robin Joy. This freebie is the best-selling book, to my knowledge, about building multiple streams of income on the internet. I wrote version one over 20 years ago. It's been updated 11 times, including most recently, a few months back. And we would love to get it into your hands completely free. Just go to silentgym.com/free11. That's free. And then 1-1, as in version 11 of the book. And that will get you information on how to get zero obligation version of that book. Just check it out. Hear us dive into these concepts with a little more depth and maybe help you navigate which of the business opportunities that are out there makes the most sense for you and your family right now. Well, thanks for hanging out with us today. We're really honored that you're a listener of our show. If you don't mind, leave us a review or subscribe wherever you're listening to this. That really helps us out, helps us spread the word. But let's turn the microphone over now to my good friends, Brian and Robin Joy. Take it away, guys.
Welcome back to Silent Sales Machine Radio. We are your co-hosts. I'm Brian.
And I'm Robin Joy.
And this is Coach's Corner.
Hi, everybody.
This week, we got questions. We've got questions.
Yes. We have a few questions that are kind of related to each other and that we want to go through those. So let us tell you what the questions are, and then we'll see if we can answer some of them, okay?
Yes.
The first one has to do with brand new sellers. When you're a brand new seller, I get this in Kickstart a lot in the Kickstart program. If I am a new seller, what am I approved to sell? Because it seems like I'm not approved to sell everything. So we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. And then why are there so many restrictions? Why does it feel like everything I pick up is restricted for me? And then I feel like there aren't enough ASINs that I can get started when I'm so restricted.
Yeah, it's the combination of those three things that I feel most of the time I feel is at the heart of the frustration for many new people who are getting started. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to dig into all this stuff. I think we got some great content for you today.
All right. So let's answer some questions.
Let's do it. All right. So the first question was, what am I approved to sell as a new seller?
Okay.
We answer this question frequently. You answer it a lot, like almost every day.
I do. I do. So we know things are changing all the time. So no promises on any of this. But what we've seen lately and for a while now is that new sellers that have never sent in a shipment before to FBA are usually approved to sell in four categories, at least, sometimes more. Home and kitchen, arts and crafts, office products, and pet supplies, but not pet food, just pet supplies like dog leashes and bowls and stuff like that. So those we're pretty sure most new sellers are approved to sell in. So that's a place to start, right?
Yes. Those are four great categories, some of the largest categories.
Yes.
Apparel's not in there. Like clothing, shoes, and jewelry's not in there. And there's that might be the largest one. But these are all pretty large categories with a ton of products in them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And normal, everyday products, not specialty products necessarily. Mm-hmm. Just run-of-the-mill, down the middle, you know, your standard store, you're going to be able to find a lot of these products.
And that kind of brings us to why, Brian, why are so many restrictions on the new sellers that haven't sent in a shipment before? Why is it so tight on them?
Well, now that you ask me, while we are recording, I sort of I wanted to go. I wish I could put a dollar amount on the value of the Amazon brand, and just say whatever it is, it's worth. I'm sure billions of dollars.
Yeah, ask a shareholder, okay? I guess.
Right? Yeah. And so the biggest reason I believe that Amazon restricts most new sellers is that Amazon's brand reputation is on the line, and they basically don't know any of us. Other than, I mean, they do want our bank account information, and they want our address and multiple addresses sometimes, and they want our blood type and the, you know, all the stuff, our firstborn's birth certificate and all that kind of stuff. But
okay, you're being facetious.
I am, right? But it does sometimes feel like, oh, and they want to do a video interview, and you have to go through, it feels like you're jumping through 1,000 hoops. So why?
Right,
why is it then that I'm still restricted,
told you who I am.
Right? Well, the bottom line is that's just to get your account set up. They have raised the bar, it seems like, every year in terms of making it, I don't want to say more difficult just for the sake of being more difficult, but they're trying to really weed out the bad actors as part of that effort. And so then we come in as good actors and we have to follow the same set of protocols.
And that really works in our favor.
Absolutely does.
Because we're good actors and we don't want to be messing with or competing against these people who are not playing by the rules.
Yes.
Right.
And one of the things that the frustration is like, gosh, it's not that hard. I can match this product and send it in. Why, you know, it's the same brand, it's the same size, it's the same color, it's the same flavor. Why can't I, you know, why am I not approved to send this in? And Amazon wants you to develop a bit of a track record with passing scores. Yes, you sent in the right product. Yes, you didn't get customer complaints. Yes, you didn't mess up on your inbound transportation. Yes, all these different things that go into your seller metric score. Mm-hmm. And I get the frustration.
Yes.
It's not that hard. However, how many times, I mean, it seems multiple times per week, it was like you'll see a post in the MST Facebook group. Hey, I made a rookie mistake and I sent in the wrong product.
Yeah, we've done it.
We've all done it. Like, it is true. I mean, so these are just some of the things you have to get out of the way. Everything seems really obvious until you make that rookie mistake and you're like, oh, and then you don't make that mistake again, usually.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And remember, if you're using a prep center, they are using your account. So if they make a mistake, that's on your account. So all these things have to be ironed out and to build a reputation with Amazon. So it kind of makes sense. And I'm kind of glad that they have, you know, tight restrictions, but it's pretty easy to get out of those restrictions just by what cares that, Brian?
Demonstrate. Yeah. develop your own track record.
Yeah.
Find more ASINs, test more ASINs, and demonstrate your ability to, you know, understand the process so that Amazon says, okay, yeah, you do know what you're doing. You've demonstrated that to me. So I'm going to approve you in category X and brand Y.
Yes. And Amazon is putting their brand on there. Amazon is bringing the eyeballs to your item that you're trying to sell. Mm-hmm. So they want to protect that brand so that they can bring more eyeballs to more people. They're very concerned about their customers, and they want to know by showing them that you are treating their customers well.
Right. And so the most run-of-the-mill products, the brands that probably don't have, I don't know the logic behind why some of the brands are restricted. Some of them are, and Amazon wants you to demonstrate your proficiency before they'll unlock more for you. And the rookie mistakes is a classic reason that happens. And also, they want to make sure that you don't have a penchant for selling counterfeit stuff, because they're not going to ungate you in Nike and Under Armour and, Kate Spade right off the bat.
Yeah. They don't want to lose those brands either. Again,
these are also high value brands. Amazon wants to protect the reputation of those brands on the Amazon platform. Otherwise, those brands could yank their products potentially off of Amazon altogether or do what we've seen happen with a couple of brands over the last 6 months, which is restrict them altogether. So, you can't sell Coach, you can't sell Clinique, you can't sell any. I think there are a few others that have been restricted like that too. And it's because they probably have a high degree of counterfeit, like they're easy targets for counterfeit. And Amazon doesn't want to dilute the brand value and reputation of those brands on their platform either. Sure. So, and I think Jim could probably tell the story here too around Nike did that one time a few years ago. They restricted the brand to only authorized sellers, and it really hurt their sales as a result. And we could see those brands that have become brand restricted potentially do that in the future as well.
Yeah. So Nike did come back after they realized, and then they said, okay, let the third party seller on again. And that could happen with this other brands, but things are changing all the time. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that Amazon wants to make sure you can manage. When things change, when things have to be adjusted, when they, adjust things, and they always have a reason. We may not understand the reason, but they have their reasons. Then they need to know that we're going to comply with those changes when they happen. We're going to be aware of what those changes are and pay attention to those emails they send us and that news on the front page of the Seller Central. They want to know that we are going to play by their rules. Kind of makes sense.
And they also have a survey out there. And I would encourage you all to take the time to answer the survey question and leave some comments.
Yes.
I do. Whenever there's something that's applicable to our business, I'm giving the feedback.
Yes. Yeah, so you're talking about on Seller Central.
On Seller Central.
Often there are surveys there that you can give your opinions. Or when they show a new page, you can give your feedback about whether you like that page or not for that report or that information that they're giving you. So utilize those things appropriately and give your feedback. They're open to that, and they're listening. They're asking for your feedback. So I don't know what they do with it, but
they action it.
I'm sure they do.
So we talk about why are there so many restrictions and what categories are open to newer accounts. Mm-hmm. Now we did some homework on this before we came into the session, and we set some criteria in Keepa to get an idea of how many products would be available to new sellers within just those four categories.
Right, because the comment was, it feels like everything I pick up I'm restricted for, that there's nothing that I can sell.
Yeah, it feels that way.
It feels that way, and it does feel that way. I think it's often, and I say this a lot, one of the most underestimated things by a new seller is how many ASINs you have to look at before you can find one that you can test.
Well, and what's interesting to me is that a lot of people feel like it's the brand restriction. So once we take the brand restriction or category restriction problem out of the way, the same problem exists. The same challenge exists. You still have to look at a lot of ASINs.
We're approved in almost everything and almost every brand in every category. And we still have to look at a lot of ASINs to find a few to test every time we source.
To find some that turn into replants.
It's not unusual. But sometimes it helps to know that that's not unusual. That is normal. That's what you're supposed to feel like. So feel comfortable that that is the way to go. You're not missing something there.
So when we looked at just those four categories and we used KEEPA and realized that KEEPA doesn't track every single ASIN that is in the catalog. So we're probably missing some. We didn't get to sweep out every single corner here, right? And we put some filters in place for each of these categories. And the filters are pretty basic. We're looking for listings that have at least three offers on them. We're looking for listings that are not hazmat. And we're looking for listings where Amazon has not been a seller at all in the last 30 days. So basically, we don't need to compete with Amazon. I added one, by the way. No variations. Non-variation listings.
Because that can be confusing for a new seller.
And
not nearly as bad as it used to be, but anyway, go ahead.
And ASINs that have a good, decent sales velocity. So at least 30 sales in the last 30, or sales rank drops in the last 30 days.
Right. We don't know exactly how many sales, but at least 30 sales rank drops in the last 30 days shows me that there's enough velocity probably that there are probably way more than 30 sales in 30 days.
Right.
So we put those restrictions on these four categories. And how many ASINs do we still come up with that we could review in each category?
Okay. In the home and kitchen category, over 21,000.
Still. Now, even after those
Right. Now, there are still maybe some brand restrictions in there, but the listings that you would want to look at, over 21,000 just in home and kitchen.
Right. Now, all of those are not going to be test worthy.
No, there's going to be a small percentage of those that are test worthy.
1% of those is...
Don't do math. Doing math.
The point is, if you haven't looked at a half of those in home and kitchen, 10,000, I can do that. If you haven't looked at 10,000 ASINs in home and kitchen, you might not have found. You might not have gotten there yet. You might not have found the ones that you're looking for yet. There are lots and lots to look at.
Yeah. The next category we looked at was arts and crafts.
Yes.
Over 10,000.
Yeah, that surprises me. I didn't realize that category was so big, but it's really big. I
mean, when you think about arts and crafts, everything from, you know, little jars of paint to, you know, styrofoam balls to whatever
I think of yarn and beads. Knitting needles.
How many SKUs does Hobby Lobby carry or Joann's or whatever? I mean, a ton. Because there's a lot of little pieces.
I just fell in love with you a little more.
Because I knew Joann's. So another 10 grand of products, over 10,000 products there. Then office products.
Office products. That's another one that almost every new seller is approved to sell in.
And this is like pens, tablets of paper, journals, staplers, right? All this great kind of stuff. Over 13,000 products. Then we also took a look at pet supplies. That one was a little bit, surprisingly, as many things as people are buying for their pets these days, there were like between 2,000 and 3,000 in that category of not pet food.
Yeah. And so that's a little bit more difficult because you have to take out several subcategories to get the food out of there. So we figured about a couple thousand at least.
Right. So to add it all up, it's like 50,000 plus products just across those four categories that meet some level of, you know, criteria in terms of sales velocity. They're not hazmat, that don't have Amazon on them, and
they're probably not private label. More FBA offers, right? So that tells me that we're not all going to find the same ones. It also tells me that there are plenty more. If I don't find them in the first 500 that I look at, there might be in the next 500. There might be, you know, 100 of them in the next 500. So don't be discouraged just because you're looking at things that are around your house. There are many, many ASINs that you might never have purchased before. But you'll find them if you just be diligent, stay the course, and keep looking until you find the ones that you are needing.
Just a quick off-script moment here.
Yeah.
We were chatting over the weekend about what new item did we want to add to our private label stable, private listing, right? Stable of listings.
Yes.
And we finally got to the point where it was like, God, just doing replens is so much easier than trying to find this, you know, this ideal product that, you know, we could add as a private listing. And there, don't get me wrong, there are thousands and potentially millions of private listing opportunities out there too.
Yeah.
But what's great about replens is we already know what the sales velocity is. We already know that people like the brand. We already know it has a good rating. There's so many positive things about doing replens compared to doing a private listing or even a bundle creation. As we've talked about before, the runway on those types of opportunities is so much longer. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Right.
In fact, exactly. We hope that everyone gets to experience that during their Amazon journey. But replens can be a real safe space.
Well, this is one of the things, and the response is much quicker in replens too.
Yeah.
I can get my money back a lot.
That's what I meant
about
the
runway. My test is a lot shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this seems like a good place to say, even though it's not in our notes, talk about why we as new sellers that have not been selling before, why we are discouraged from making new listings that are already in Amazon's catalog.
Reason number one.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go first?
Sure. Reason number one. There are pitfalls in making a new listing. And there are things that can, not just that you'll make a mistake and it won't work well, you could make a mistake that could get you in trouble with Amazon.
This is a great point, and I hate to, like, it's not a fear-mongering tactic, but I can't tell you how many people I've heard of recently, more than two handfuls, who have gotten their account under temporary suspension or on hold because of products that they sold a while back where the listing was created incorrectly or they created the listing incorrectly. Mm-hmm. And so all it takes is one mistake when you're making that listing.
Yes.
And you could get yourself in IP trouble.
So honestly, if you're going to make a new listing, make sure you have somebody who is well-versed in doing that alongside of you, helping you out to do that. So that's number one reason.
Mm-hmm.
Number two reason, what do you say?
Well, that was going to be my reason.
So. Oh, that was good. Well, let me give you another one.
Okay.
So when I look at deciding, when I decide whether I'm going to test an ASIN or not, I don't know if it's going to be profitable until I test it. So I have some criteria that tell me it's worth testing. One of those, well, all three of those criteria come from Keepa. I need to have 90 days worth of Keepa history in order for me to know what's been happening. Because, Brian, what is the best way to tell what's going to happen in the future?
What happened in the past.
Right. So the only way we can know what has happened in the past is to look at Keepa and that a record of what has happened. If I'm making a brand new ASIN today, and all went well, and I didn't get in trouble, and I knew what I was doing, I still have no history. I don't have any idea whether that's going to sell well or not.
Exactly, especially if you've never done it before. Now, if you've done that scenario where there was no history, you mined the keywords, you had the images made, you created the listing, it's a converting listing, Amazon ranks it, and you've done that 10, 12, 25 times before.
Yeah, but we're talking
about... No, we're talking about new people.
New people who have not done that before.
Right. So, yeah, that, not saying it's impossible. Like,
no.
It's just extra challenging.
It's extra challenging, and you don't want to waste your time. It's already a test.
Yeah.
It's already an unknown until you test it. So why add more complication to that when there are so many that you can test? And there's one more that I usually think of, and that has to do with the indexing of that. Once you make, can anybody see that ASIN once you've made a new ASIN?
So, you know, there are some processes that Amazon goes through to try and highlight newly created listings if they're created properly to see if those things are going to sell. So Amazon will, at least for a short period of time, put those ASINs in front of shoppers where they can match up the keywords with what the product is, with what people are searching for. Like, a lot of things have to come into alignment. And if it doesn't come into alignment, then that product may never be seen. It may be in the catalog, but it may be on page 27 and no shopper is ever going to go to page 27 to find the product. Now we will, because we're looking for it, right? We're
right.
We're going to know
how third-party sellers are going to be looking for those. Yeah, but
we're going to know. No, I mean, just mean we're going to look for it because it's our listing.
Oh,
we're going to click, you know, next page, next page until we find it. And we'll go, why is this on page 8? Right. But shoppers are not going to go to page 8 most of the time. So whether it gets indexed and whether it gets indexed in a place where shoppers can see it is two different things.
And often it takes some other, it's a skill set in itself.
What normally then improves the rank of a listing is that it sells.
Right.
So it's like this chicken and egg scenario that you have. Well, how do you sell it? Well, it has to get known. How do you get it known? You got to sell it.
So this is why more of the private listings and there are bundle creation skill sets and new listings creation skill sets that we don't start people off in replants with.
Right.
So these are several reasons we could probably name more.
We have before,
But yeah, so this is not a good time when you're brand new and you're just sending in your first few shipments. I would say even until you have, you know, a $10,000 to $15,000 a month business, you know, predictable foundation that you wouldn't want to build a new ASIN.
Start to entertain before you started to entertain that.
Yeah. So, okay. So I want to throw that in.
Okay.
Now, we want to make sure that we talk about the things that you can be approved for. So at high level, you're approved for brand and or you're approved for categories. So brand and category are two different things. One ASIN has a brand and it's in a category. You can be approved for the brand and not the category. Mm-hmm. You can't sell on that ASIN.
Mm-hmm.
You can be approved for the category and not the brand. You can't sell on that ASIN. You must be approved for both. So I have a lot of people initially say, oh yeah, I clicked on there and they said, yep, you're approved. And then I went to buy it and I wasn't approved. Well, it might be because you were approved for that brand, but you weren't approved in that category yet.
Or vice versa.
Or vice versa.
We see that frequently.
We do see that frequently.
So what we suggest is if you can add that item to your inventory before you go shopping, that is going to be maybe not the final test, but a pretty good litmus test for whether you're actually approved in the brand and the category before you actually send it in.
Yep. I would definitely do that, especially in the beginning before I go shopping, because I don't want to have to take all that stuff back when I find out I couldn't sell it.
Yep.
But these are things that we're testing for. As we're testing, these are some of the things that we're testing for. Are there going to be any issues with that ASIN if I want to replenish it? Are there going to be any issues with putting that in my catalog? Are there going to be any issues in sending that to an FBA warehouse?
Mm-hmm.
Some ASINs you won't be able to send to an FBA warehouse for whatever reasons. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what it is about between brand approval and category approval.
Right. So that answers kind of the questions that we led off with. So now that we know there are over 50,000 products that are available to most newer accounts, and that we, you know, need to make sure that we're getting the brand and the category approval and why those restrictions exist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's our plan? Okay, now that we know these things, we understand the why, how can we go forward?
Okay, so here's what happened when you brought me in. Now, we've told this a little bit before. You started out and you began the business and you started finding ASINs. You started finding replenishable ASINs. And how did you do that initially?
So initially, I was only a Target shopper. So in other words, if it wasn't a deal for me at Target, it just wasn't a deal.
Yes.
And because the main reason was that there was a Target superstore within walking distance of where we lived. Not that I walked. I still drove because I was piling my car full of stuff. But it was super convenient, right? Like literally less than a half a mile from where I lived. Boom, I could be right there at Target, pick up all the stuff. And what would happen? A lot of lessons were learned. The one Target is usually not enough, right? So then we started making a route of Targets, and I was going to multiple Targets in town to get all the products that I needed. But just even with that one store as a trusted source for me, I was able to find around 60 ASINs that we called replens at the time.
And it was kind of funny because he would find some that would only have, you know, one or two on the shelf. And then they wouldn't restock those for a while in that Target, and then started going all over town. And then he started sending messages to all of our family and friends that lived near us. Hey, if you'll pick this up at your Target, I'll come by and get it next time I'm there. So he put us all to work.
Yeah. So I'm thinking like, if a plan of attack is like, mm-hmm. pick a trustworthy source and go start mapping products. Mm-hmm. And that trustworthy source for me in the beginning was Target. I just felt more comfortable shopping at Target. And I started to map products from Target to ASINs on Amazon. Then.
So basically, let me make sure I understand. Mm-hmm. So you said, here's a listing on Target. Is there an ASIN that matches that?
Correct.
And then you started to see whether that ASIN was going to be worth testing, right?
Exactly. Okay. Right. Because the other problem that we hear about from new sellers frequently is, I don't know if I can trust this website.
Yeah.
So don't do that. Go with the websites that you can trust.
Yeah. Stick with the ones that you already shop with, that you already trust. Make sure they're not third-party sellers like mm-hmm. eBay, but yeah. Stick with those. There are plenty. In fact, most of our replants come from those stores still that you know, love, and trust. Mm-hmm. Walmart, Target, Kroger, Home Depot, Lowe's. Those stores are fine to shop at, and there are plenty of listings that you can get from there.
Well, we talked about before, like I think Walmart has most Walmarts almost are all Walmarts like super centers now?
I don't know.
No, some of them are like the neighborhood grocery stores.
Yes, but, I know there's one downtown Denver.
But the Walmarts, the superstores, usually have over 100,000 products in the store.
That's just in the store.
That's just, plus a bunch of stuff that they don't carry in the store usually. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there are a ton. And Targets have like 40,000. And I mean, there's no shortage of products out there for sure, right?
No,
okay. So this is why I was able to build up to 60, my list of 60, just using Target. But when I got Robin's attention and—
When he roped me into this whole thing.
Yeah, when you roped yourself in, when you voluntold yourself. Okay. Yeah.
When I said, Brian?
Yeah.
So how's that thing
going? How's that work?
How's that work?
Got any more of them Amazon ASINs? Yeah. So then
what happened?
So then we expanded from the one source to a total of 5 sources.
Yes. Right?
So we added—
Because I was not afraid. I didn't get a rash when I drove by a Walmart.
Walmart, right.
And Mr. He will not go to— still. Mm-hmm. To Walmart to save money. He won't go to a Walmart to save money, but he will go to a Walmart to make money all day mm-hmm. long. He'll go in there with a list and he'll clean those shelves out. I've seen him do it.
It's my favorite part of the business.
It is fun. It is fun.
Anyway, so Robin added 4 new sources mm-hmm. and within 2 months built that list from 60 to over 300 items that
Again,
we were replenishing to.
4 stores
to.
That we already shopped at, mm-hmm. that we were already comfortable with, that we knew were reputable retailers.
So what we suggest is pick your 5, mm-hmm. whatever that is for you. It mm-hmm. could be your local version of Kroger or King Soopers or Safeway or whatever is
remember,
in your neighborhood.
Every one of those stores has different things mm-hmm. in different neighborhoods. They have different items in their store.
And depending on where you are, leverage the regional aspect of those stores. Like mm-hmm. we're kind of in, when you look at it on a map, we're in the middle of nowhere in terms of population, right?
Yeah.
Denver
is the population.
Yeah. But so we don't have much in the way of these cool regional stores, like let's say an HEB or a Meijer or an Aldi or.
Right. We do have Trader Joe's now.
Trader Joe's finally came around, and we do have some Tractor Supply. In the rural areas, we have some of those, the more regional stores. Mm-hmm. We just don't live in a rural area, so we don't shop them as frequently. But pick, build your list. Build your list of 5 sources for you that you know when you go shopping there, you are buying from a trusted source.
Right.
And if you're going to online shop at Walmart, which we highly encourage, just be sure you're not online shopping from third-party sellers. Make sure that the retailer is only Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And
yes.
If you do
that's
that,
important.
And you've got these 5, you'll have an unlimited supply of ASINs to go build your replens book of business with.
Absolutely.
The trick is the last mile.
Yes.
And I think we talked about this a little bit in previous weeks, but when we talk about the last mile of a delivery service, Mm-hmm. If I'm shipping a product to a family member across the country and I'm going to use UPS, I'll usually go drop it off at the UPS store. So the collector for UPS is these UPS stores, and they'll pick it up for my house too, which they do for our Amazon business. But that is the hard, that's the hard part, is going to the doorstep to pick up those products. Mm-hmm. Once it's in the system, then it's much easier because it's like all, you know, these many, many packages are going from one distribution center in one part of the country to another distribution center in mm-hmm. another part of the country. So that part's pretty easy. But once it gets to that distribution center, then the last mile is getting it from there again back out to the doorstep, mm-hmm. right? So I like to use that as an example for mapping ASINs and sources. Mm-hmm. We've got the source that is your, you know, Target, Walmart, Meijer, whatever it is, Home Depot. And then we've got the ASIN that lives on Amazon. And there's a gap between those two. And that gap is only crossed when we put our eyeballs mm-hmm. on those products, the source product and the product listed in the ASIN, to make sure that it is an exact match.
And that's what takes the time.
That is what takes the time. It's the hardest part, mm-hmm. right? This is where I think if you're going to leverage a contractor or a virtual assistant, to me, that's what you should be paying them to do, is map sources to ASINs.
Yeah.
Because the rest of what we do in this business can be automated. And if you want a quality list, automation doesn't truly exist to match those two things yet.
Yeah. You still have to put eyeballs on it.
Yeah.
It can shorten the process sometimes. But
this is one of the reasons we stopped using a tool, let's say like Tactical Arbitrage. Nothing wrong with it. I know a lot of people who still use it, but sure. We found that we were investing just as much time quality checking all of the ASINs that it gave back to us because there were a ton of mismatches.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we can eliminate the mismatch scenario and map an entire store of products to ASINs on Amazon by going through this process. Mm-hmm. Now, that's no small feat.
No, it's not.
It's not.
A skill that can be built, but when you get good at it,
that's your competitive advantage.
Competitive advantage. Not everybody's good at that. In fact, there are very few people who are really good at that.
Well, and it's because it's the overlooked part. It's the ugly part of the job, right? It's the non-exciting part. Is this a match? Yes, it is. Okay, here's a link to the source and I know what the cost is. Great. And here's the matching ASIN. Once I have those things, then I can put automation in place, like mm-hmm. I started to say a minute ago. But the less glamorous or the unglamorous part of the mm-hmm. job is doing that mapping. But I'm telling you that when you get a whole section of a store mapped, like if you're going to map the dog treat section from Target to ASINs on Amazon, mm-hmm. when you get that mapped, every single product that they have,
you go to that well anytime you want.
You can go back there anytime and evaluate all those ASINs and say, are any of these going
to
work for me?
And they're always changing. So mm-hmm. you have something to evaluate there.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
I was
going to
make some great point that I totally forgot what it was.
Oh, so sorry. Well, you know.
No, anyway, it's the hardest part.
It was very profound.
But that's where the fruit is, right? Is in doing that hard work. What I started, I remember what it was.
Oh, okay.
It's no small feat, but it's not rocket science.
Right.
Right. It's the most mundane, but if you can master the mundane here mm-hmm. and then outsource the mundane mm-hmm. and scale the outsource of those mundane tasks, then you will have a phenomenally thriving business.
Yes. Yes. It's good that it's a mundane task because when you outsource it, mm-hmm. you don't want to have to build that whole knowledge of your business. You just want someone to do that task for you, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
Just a task.
And
all
then
right.
you get to use your own brain power for...
Yes, for making the decisions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right.
All right, so you got a quote for us today, Brian?
I do have a quote. I always have a quote.
I thought you might.
This time I'm prepared with a quote. So last week, or depending on when you're listening to this, a previous episode, we talked about there's no magic formula for determining is an ASIN test worthy or profitable or whatever.
Right.
Right? There's just no magic formula for that. There's a lot of variables involved. But in this case, we did find a formula. We did find a formula for success. This is the formula for success.
Okay.
There is a magic formula for success. Ready? The formula is simple. Start and then keep going after it gets hard.
Uh-huh.
This quote comes to us from Cody Sanchez.
Yes. The formula is simple.
Start and then keep going after it gets hard. And hard is not necessarily hard as in insurmountable, but hard as in mundane, repetitive.
Takes a long time. I've done this. I've looked at so many ASINs. Mm-hmm. I still got to look at more. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. If you keep going, then you're going to have the advantage.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to get hard even after you have a book of business. It's still, yes. There are still hard times.
Just with any business, are hard things.
It's not nothing to be a successful business for a long period of time. It's because it takes hard work and perseverance and things I've talked about before.
Exactly.
Right? All right. So when things get hard, you know what solves that problem?
Go test more ASINs.
Go test some more ASINs. Let's go test some more ASINs.
Let's go test some more ASINs. Thanks everybody. Everyone. We'll see
you soon.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for hanging out for today's podcast episode, but I got a couple more minutes of great stuff for you. I got my good friend, Jeff Schick, who's with us once a week or so around here, a great sponsor of our community and the preferred expert on all things Amazon policy and legal. He's a lawyer with Amazon expertise here to serve you for a few dollars a month, as he does for so many on our leadership team. Welcome to the community, Jeff.
Thank you for having me.
To the show, I should say.
Yeah.
Been in the community a long time.
Yeah.
Good to see you, man. What's on your mind today?
All right. So what I got on my mind today is extra units. So back in 2022, I actually recorded a video when I went shopping at TJ Maxx, and I was trying to show people what's a good Amazon receipt. And it's kind of funny, at the time I was going through everything and I was like, look, this is, you know, the Nike shirt that I bought, and this is where it corresponds to the receipt. And I looked like an idiot on the YouTube that I was creating, because when I was going through the receipt, I realized that I couldn't find it on the receipt. I hadn't paid for it. They didn't.
Okay. So you left the store with some stuff in your bag, with a shirt of many other items you had paid for that you hadn't paid for. So it wasn't on the receipt. I'm following you. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was like, there's probably 15 items on the receipt. I walked out with 16. I didn't catch that. They took the tag off, the security tag, but they didn't scan it. So, I got that shirt for free. And so on the one hand, some sellers would be like, oh my gosh, I got $15 for free from TJ Maxx. Problem with that logic is that Amazon is sort of enforcing ethics at this point. So, one of the big things that they're doing on their Section 3 verifications now is they will call the stores where you bought items from. It could be online arbitrage, retail arbitrage, or wholesale. And then one of the questions they've now added to their script is, did the seller, pay for the items in question, and have there been any returns? And that's designed to make sure that sellers aren't buying, 1,000 boxes of Kleenexes from Staples, returning them and buying 1,000 more from Goodwill and trying to use a Staples receipt. Because obviously Staples would be valid and Goodwill.
Ooh, that's good. Yes, I love that. Okay, so let me just repeat what I just heard you say. And you've mentioned this to me before, but as sellers look for creative ways to skirt the rules, Amazon's getting smarter about making sure they don't. Because as you and I both know, and we've heard on past episodes where we've discussed, if I go to a Goodwill crate sale or some bargain bin R Us, where I'm buying a crate full of, say, Kleenexes, like you just said, tissues, and I pay a quarter a piece, thinking, man, that is struck gold. And the way I'm going to cover myself is I'm going to buy 1,000 legitimate units and then return them quietly. So I've got a good receipt.
Right.
Amazon's going to sniff that out.
They do.
That's great. I like that, because we're facing the heat every day as legitimate sellers of having to go through legitimate channels. So the more Amazon ensures sellers aren't doing illegitimate things, the better it is for all of us. We're all playing on the same level battlefield, basically, that way.
You got it. So that is one of the things they do now, is they check, did the seller pay for it? And they want to know, was it paid for? Because, mm-hmm. Goods that you have an invoice for, but that says, due in 30 days, that's not, it doesn't mean anything if it's not paid for, because after 30 days, if you haven't paid for them, they become stolen.
Yeah. So that's not a legit invoice. Yeah.
So that's the logic train there. So they always say, has this invoice, because for instance, with my business, I had net 30, right? So I could buy stuff on February 1st and they charge my credit card March 20th for it.
Yeah.
But that would, if they would have called, Amazon would have called my supplier, they would have said, yeah, we saw that invoice was paid on March 20th. And that would have been, it would have been closed out and good.
Right.
So there's that aspect of it, that they're checking to make sure that you don't return stuff. The other thing that I was getting at with the TJ Maxx as well is that they want to make sure that you've actually bought it. So even though my shirt is authentic Nike, it's got Nike tags on it, if it's not paid for, they have to assume that it's stolen. And the sale of stolen goods is against the law in all 50 states. And so, and it, violates federal law.
There's a lot of stolen goods out there, especially what you've mentioned, like Southern California, the professional shoplifting rings are just clearing. We've seen the videos. Amazon doesn't want that stuff on their shelves. So they have to know steps to make sure that it isn't. So that would be a good example where they would make sure the invoice or the receipt matches exactly.
Exactly. So sellers have asked me before, they said, like I had a seller call me a couple of weeks ago. She said, my buyers went out, we hit all these retail stores. We, you know, bought, you know, like $20,000 worth of stuff in one shopping trip. And we came home and we realized that like 20 of the items weren't paid for. What do we do? And I said, unfortunately, even though the store was 2 hours away, I said, the answer is get back and you'll call them and see if they can run your credit card for the items in question, you know, and send you an emailed invoice. Or get in your car and take the items over there and have them scan them or return them, you know, drop them off and get rid of them. She's like, so we can't just sell them on Amazon. I said, no, because you don't have any proof of authenticity. Right. So even though you know they're authentic, they're technically stolen. They're shoplifted. You know, on the very low end, they were unintentionally shoplifted. So you got
it. So I got to know, Jeff, what'd you do? Did you do the right thing with your $15 shirt? What happened there?
What happened there? I think it did go back or it went to Goodwill because it didn't fit me. So might have been. I don't
know. Well, you owe Kohl's $15, man. We're not going to let you rest till we hear that you paid them the money you owe.
I didn't sell it on Amazon. That's for sure.
That's for sure. Yeah. That avoided that for sure. All right. Well, yeah, that's a great example. I mean, just how seriously Amazon takes the invoice issue. I know we've hit on other shows.
Yeah.
What is a legitimate invoice? What is a legitimate receipt? And we'll hit that next time. I think that'd be a good one just to remind everybody that it gets overcomplicated a lot, but it really is a pretty simple way to know if you've got a legit invoice or receipt from an authorized retailer, wholesaler, distributor. Pretty simple to know.
And of course, my examples that I've given so far were retail arbitrage. But if you want to think about it in the online arbitrage or the wholesale space, you know, in the wholesale space, I used to do wholesale. So that's how I can speak from experience, you know. If we ordered 1,200 bottles of pet shampoo and they shipped us, you know, we knew that roughly 5% was going to be damaged when it showed up because our manufacturer didn't use inner seals. So we would actually have to poly bag all the units ourselves or eventually upgrade to shrink wrap machines because we realized that it decreased returns by half when we shrink wrap the bottles. Kind of an interesting thing a side note for sellers, if you have products that you sell that you know often have high returns, if you get an L-bar seal or a shrink wrap, buyers are afraid to return something if it's shrink wrapped because they think that once they've broken the shrink wrap, they can't return it. So just a side note for some sellers.
Psychological manipulation of the buyer. I love it.
Our return rate went from 2.5% to under 1% once we started shrink wrapping things. So
cut it in half. But also I remember you saying like, so let's take those 60 bad units and you go back to the manufacturer, the wholesaler and say, hey, you know, we're short 60 units and they just send you 60 or, you know, maybe 70 to make up for it.
Right.
They go a little high. You got to know that you've got invoices to match up with the quantities that you're selling or Amazon will hold you accountable for that. If they send you more than what you've paid for, you could ultimately have trouble, correct?
Correct. So what our manufacturer used to do to help make sure that we didn't have issues is they would literally send us an invoice, you know, same software and everything, but it would be zeroed out. So it'd say, you know, unit cost $0, quantity 60. And it would just say, you know, replacement items, and it would have all the SKU number and everything else. So that way it lined up that we ordered 1200, we received 1260, 1220 went into Amazon and whatnot, you know, and it was,
because
their whole logic was like, some of them could be refurbished and resalvaged and some of them couldn't. So they would just so they didn't want it back because it was too much trouble for them.
Right.
But so if you same OA, if you receive, you know, if you order, you know, 25 Starbucks mugs from Starbucks.com and they ship you 25, then you're good. But if you order 25 Starbucks mugs and they ship you 50 and you send in 50, you've only got a receipt for 25. Those other 25 Amazon's going to assume are stolen and you have no proof or counterfeit. And there's no proof if you don't have a receipt. So what should sellers do when they get it? Quite honestly, they should reach out to Starbucks and say, please charge my card for 25 mugs. They'll get that invoice. And as long as the invoice is dated before the date you send it into FBA, you're good. If Starbucks says, sorry, you just can keep it, then the answer is great. I can keep it. That's when
you know. Give it away as Christmas presents,
going to church, whatever you may want to do with it. But Amazon's still not the solution because even an email from Starbucks saying, feel free to do what you want with it, that's not an acceptable proof of authenticity for 25 mugs. That's just an acceptable proof that you can feel good about yourself giving it to friends and family or somebody in need.
Right. You're still doing the ethical thing by keeping them at that point because they told you you could, but don't sell them on Amazon. I love it. Well, thanks for helping us dial in. This is a fun topic. I think it's going to help a lot of folks out. And yeah. Once again, you know, on this whole invoice receipt issue, 99.9999% of the time, if you know what you're doing, you're going to be just perfectly fine. It's when you drift off of these common sense guardrails that you keep telling us about that you get yourself into trouble. So thanks again, Jeff. Today's guest, Mr. Jeff Schick of jeffschick.com. The vast majority of the leaders in our community are using him for their services, as are countless others in our community for all their e-commerce policy and legal needs. So thanks again, Jeff. We'll do this again next week if you're around. Okay, buddy?
Sounds good. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Silent Sales Machine Radio. Visit silentjim.com for a link to our free newsletter, our free Facebook group, and all of our resources mentioned on today's show.